I see Eco Challenge on TV and I see these females. They are so strong. They're racing right along side of these men, you know, and I thought, that's the sport. I'm going to learn how to be an adventure racer.
That was Jen Sager, and this is episode 137 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. Okay, everyone, have we got a treat for you today. Jen Sager is a force. She has spent the last 20 plus years traveling the globe, competing as a world-class adventure racing athlete and ultra runner. For decades, she has pushed her body and mind to the extremes, exploring her true potential and going beyond what she thought was previously possible. Jen shares her experiences and knowledge with those that she works with. As a full-time endurance coach to athletes of all levels from around the world and through guiding backpack country running adventures, she enjoys helping people achieve their own individual potential. In this episode, we dive into how Jen got into adventure and endurance sports, her experience at Eco Challenge Fiji, some of her race highlights, including Marathon des Sables, her coaching business and passion project, Run BC, and what's coming up on her competitive roster for this year, including Expedition Canada in BC and the Divide 200 in Alberta. Jen has recently moved back to Vancouver Island, where she enjoys exploring her new playground with her partner and 9-year-old son. It is there that we caught up with her for this very energetic and inspiring chat. Well, Jen, welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We're so excited to have you with us here this evening.
Thanks so much for having me. This is great. Looking forward to a little chat.
Yes, I'm actually really excited about this one because you've been on my radar for a very long time through a mutual friend of ours, Sarah Seeds. And I was in Courtney Comox, the Comox Valley. I know you live in Royston, correct?
That's a few weeks ago
and out in the pouring rain, enjoying myself immensely in Cumberland on the trails with her and asking her, give us some ideas for some podcast guests. And she reminded me that we haven't had you on the show yet. And so here we are. Why don't we start out maybe just asking you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Describe to us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and anything else you'd like to share.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, great to be here. And of course, I always like, you know, speaking, running and adventure, travel, sort of tying all that in together. It has been really what the last 20 years of my life, maybe even before that, but, you know, certainly a good 20 years of using an array of endurance athletic endeavors to see and travel the world. And so I have spent the last few decades living in Squamish, BC, although I am originally from Vancouver Island, so we have just moved home. And I began in Squamish, just wanting to have the big mountains to train and pursue some of my goals. And what better way than living right at the base of some of these fantastic trails and in good vertical, and being able to train, you know, year round and utilize the snow as well. And so we've just recently moved back, though, and I'm finding a new playground here on Vancouver Island to continue to get out and explore and revisit. And now with my family, so things look a little bit different. But it's been a great move, and really enjoying it.
When did you move back? How long has it been?
It's been almost 2 years. Yeah. So we were waiting for our son to finish up school, grade 2. And so we moved the day school was out, and found ourselves here in the Comox Valley. And it's been great. We are about a minute from the ocean. So that checks the boxes. And world-class terrain, great mountain biking and trail running in Cumberland, and a great community of people here we found again. And of course, you mentioned, Sarah Seeds, and she's a longtime friend, one of my all-time favorite adventure buddies. And so it felt like home coming back here and stepping into a very familiar environment and with great people. So enjoying it.
Well, Carolyn and I both have spent time in the Comox Valley. I lived there for 15 years and left in 2015. And she moved into town basically right after I left. For how long were you there, Carolyn?
Yeah, 2016 to 2018. Yeah, 2 years to the day.
Yeah, oh, okay. But, you know, I think no one can argue that that place is special and makes a large impact on you. And I couldn't imagine a better place for an adventure sport athlete to, you know, do all of the things. I believe today was the snow to surf, a race where you could do, I don't know, 8 or 9 sports in one day, from snow to road to trail to lake to ocean, a great playground. So because of the depth and breadth of your experience, and we'll get into that a little bit in this episode, I'm really, really curious, how did it all start? Like, did you start out just playing and exploring and falling in love with, I don't know, multi different sports? Or did you have a first love? How did your athletic story begin?
You know, I played a lot of team sports, like so many, through my, you know, junior high and high school years. And I was a very competitive field hockey player, actually. So heavily involved on the team aspect. I was playing for the BC team for multiple years, and we were trying out for the Canadian team. So the new squad for the Olympics team was coming around. Right about the same time that we were graduating, there's a few of us from the Cowichan Valley. And so it was right around the time we were graduating from high school. And it sort of was that critical moment of, you know, do we go down to the US to play for an American school, or, you know, what's the next choice here to keep going at a high level of field hockey? And I really had to do some deep, you know, digging within myself to see if that was something I wanted to continue. And there was just this gut feeling that was like, I think I'm done with field hockey. I think there's something else out there for me. I didn't know what it was at the time. Very hard decision to make. Like, I remember just being in turmoil over this. Do I pull my name from trying out for the squad, and where do I go? And anyway, I chose to stay on Vancouver Island, go to a local school in Nanaimo for college. And it was there that I was studying outdoor recreation and tourism. And I eventually took a summer job guiding down in the U.S. In between semesters. And I got to experience an adventure race. A one day, very short, but it was a little taste of adventure sports. And at this point in time, I was now whitewater paddling and I was mountain biking, nothing crazy, but sort of got to experience tying these sports together in a competitive atmosphere. And being a very competitive person, I was like, ooh, this is interesting. Okay. And I kind of parked it for a little bit in the back of my head. And anyway, I went on to Australia to finish my degree. I had a great transfer. And one night in my dorm room, up on TV pops the Eco Challenge. And so I see Eco Challenge on TV and I see these females. And I was like, wow, like they are so strong. They're racing right along side of these men. You know, at the time, teams were usually a 4 or 5 and you had to have one female. And I thought, like, that's it. And so I finished my degree and I moved. I think I was home for 10 days after being gone for like 2 years, and moved home and moved right to Whistler and was like, that's the sport. I'm going to learn how to be an adventure racer. And so I just knew I needed like some really good terrain and access, and that it all just really launched me forward from there. I started finding teams around the world who were looking for a strong female, and I just saw opportunity. I saw it as a ticket to travel the world and just go to some really cool places. I mean, you're so off the grid when you're doing these 700 kilometer courses, right? You're not going where the tourists go. You're interacting with locals, and you get so remote and so deep into the woods. And I just loved it.
Did you get into the long multi-day events right from the beginning, or did you start out with shorter events?
Right from the beginning, within that first year, I essentially was looking at every and any race that I could. So I did some of the local MOMAR, the Mind Over Mountain Adventure races. I connected with a team in Vancouver. We raced in Newfoundland at the World Championships that year. And then I think we went to New Zealand as well that year for the Southern Traverse. And it just became, and then it became full-time for me. Then I started to race for various, usually American teams, and was racing for two at one time, usually a sprint team. And when I say sprint, that would be anything under 24 hours, as well as an expedition team. And it was really just life on the road for a lot of my 20s. It was in and out of airports and hardly unpacking the mountain bike, you know, just saying yes to everything really is what happened.
So other than field hockey, so you had this field hockey and then you had this experience with the adventure racing, but like, had you ever kind of done the 5Ks and the 10Ks and the marathons? Like, had you ever done any of that kind of adventuring or road racing at all before this, or you just went straight into adventure racing?
I just went straight into adventure racing and just sort of found it was my niche. I love the long distance aspect of it. I just seemed to be built for it. My body just seemed to really be able to handle the big volume, the long miles. It was this sense that I can hardly explain, but that I love so much, like crossing a finish line after 4, 5, 6 days of racing, almost like an addiction, like that huge high you get when you've accomplished something. And I think it just kept me coming back and wanting more. So no, I hadn't done any of the short things up until that point. And then from there, I kind of found my way into ultra running quite quickly as well.
Which, you know, there's certain similarities between any ultra endurance sport, whether it's ultra running, ultra biking, you know, adventure racing. You know, when you get into the multi-day and the fatigue and the mindset part of it. But let's just go back. So you went pro pretty much within your first year, it sounds like. And at that point, what year are we talking here? Was this like the early 2000s?
It was, yeah.
When adventure racing was huge at that point. Yeah, that's when, you know, I remember sitting watching, you know, the Mark Burnett guided experiences that we would have on TV. And yeah, thinking, oh my goodness, how are people doing this kind of thing? Did you have a favorite, you know, an area that you know, I know it's the three sports is the traditional, right? Is the orienteering / trekking, mountain biking, and some paddling.
You know, I gravitated and probably still do to the mountain biking and trek running legs that we have. You know, I'm not a huge fan. I don't love kayaking. I feel like we actually see less and less of kayaking on its own now. Instead, pack rafting has become a big part of the sport. And so that's really fun. Really love that. We get, because you can, you know, you're carrying these boats in your bags. You're getting to access really remote waterways and things like that. Typically, you know, they couldn't get you on a kayak to do. So we might be trekking for 50K and then finding some river we need to paddle on. And that I think it just opens up the doors of where race directors can take us. But in saying that too, I do a lot of stand-up paddle boarding now. From time to time, we see it in the sport as well. We had some big legs of it in Eco Challenge Fiji. And that's been a great thing because my husband is sort of at the forefront of paddle boarding here in Canada. And he runs expeditions all over, you know, the world too with that. So it's a great sport for us to do together, although he's much stronger. He's just a machine out there. But we really enjoy paddle boarding and expeditions together doing that. So yeah, you know, I love the versatility of adventure racing because you get to train in all disciplines. You know, if you can mix it up, if you're, you know, your legs need a break, you can hit the water. So I think it just keeps things really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we just had on an adventure race guy. He does adventure racing himself. He's a race director as well. His name's Chris Fenlon McDonald. And it wouldn't have been too long ago. So you can search back in our feed and we'll link it up in the show notes. But this is sort of the first we've had adventure racers on. And so he was explaining a little bit about what this all is. But something you said earlier about, I feel like I'm built for this. Like I'm durable. Like I can, can you expand on that? Like, what does that mean? So you can just do these 600, 700 kilometer races and you feel like you're kind of designed for this. Like, what does that mean?
You know, I think we can see in various sports and or in the running world, just there's some people that seem to get injured a lot more frequently, right? Or maybe it's not even injury, but maybe it's that they sort of find maybe their sweet spot is like 10K running. And then after that, they just find beyond that, the body starts to break down a lot or different little niggles and twinges and things come up. Or maybe you get those athletes that are good at that 50K, but beyond that, maybe not so much. Or maybe, you know, they realize that three runs a week, that's their max. That's what their happy place, sweet spot for the body, but maybe not running at 6 days a week or whatnot. And I seem to just be able to, and I have since the beginning, been able to help tolerate really, you know, big volume, which you need when you're doing these 600-700 kilometer type races, right? You need to be able to be on your feet, have your joints, have your tendons, you know, structurally really sound for those sort of distances time. And, you know, now granted, I've built that up over the years, but my body just sort of took to it very well. You know, and it just doesn't seem to break down. So I actually even find the longer the race goes on, the stronger I get, the better I feel, you know. And so as long as I'm doing a lot of good training habits and good protocols properly, I seem to be able to stay on top of it and have had that long career in the sport.
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure, you're doing something right to still, like you said, be doing it after so many years. Talk to us a little bit about the mental durability aspect to this. You know, the physical body's one thing. It's a whole other thing when you're going into your fifth night of very little sleep and a 20th year of your career or more, right? What do you think about you suits you to this sport and a long career from the mental aspect?
You know, I talk to my athletes a lot about this because I think the number one thing is that you have to want to be out there, right? Like we choose to take on these challenges, no matter what it is. If it's running that first half marathon to, you know, an ultra run, it doesn't matter. But when you set these goals, you know, you've got to make sure that they're your goals. And therefore, you have to be prepared for the roller coaster that comes with it. You know, so I'm always thinking about, I chose to put myself out there. And so I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to ride that roller coaster and for whatever it brings. I think now, because when I'm away and I'm on these courses, you know, I'm stepping away from family life, mom duties, you know, everything that comes with that. And I just try to enjoy myself. I'm like, I am so lucky to be out here, soak it in, look around, you know, be that good teammate, be positive, because this is like a week. I guess this is how I'm choosing to spend my vacation almost.
This is what you came for, right?
Right. So mindset is everything, because the body we can train, right? We can prepare it so well. The body's capable of amazing things. And we prove that to ourselves all the time. What we didn't think we could do, and then we do it. But the mind, you know, you've got to keep it mentally in the game. You've got to want to be out there, and you've got to be able to embrace whatever the challenges that come your way are.
Yeah. You speak to something that has come up many times. You know, when you set big goals for yourself, they have to be your goals. They can't be somebody else's goals, because eventually that why is going to be tested, and you need your own, not just one reason, but two or three or 10 reasons why you're out there doing this thing. And, you know, you're a professional at what you do. Most people listening are not professionals at what they do. You know, it's not their day job. It's something that they do that is supposed to enhance their lives. And that came out in a way that implies that your day job may not be something you like to do. You're one of those fortunate people, I think, that gets paid to do what you love. But anyways, where am I going with this? So I think I'd like to move a little bit now into some of your career highlights. And it is literally impossible for me to list them all. There are so many amazing places you have visited, events you've completed. I'm going to toss this to you to maybe highlight a few experiences, let's call them experiences, that you've had in your career that have really left a deep impact on you. They may not have been the first place finishes or the most flashy event. It may have been an event that you really didn't do well in, but somehow altered the direction that you chose to take with your training and your career. So, you know, what are some key things that stand out to you when you think about what you've accomplished?
Well, I think the one, probably just because we've been on the adventure racing topic, was the participation at Eco Challenge Fiji. That was a great course, of course, seeing Fiji and all the village. Like, it was just an incredible experience. It was just this larger than life type event. But the reason it was so special for me is it completed that circle. You know, like I told you, when I saw the Eco Challenge on TV, and always dreamed of it. Now, of course, other races I got to do, they just didn't have the name Eco Challenge on them. Because that very year I started, Eco Challenge disappeared for the next, I believe, 17 years. Mark Burnett didn't put on an event. And so I always felt like, oh, I missed my chance at like the Eco Challenge. And then when I heard it was coming back, you know, our team got a spot in the race, and it just completed that loop for me, finally getting to actually experience like the magnitude of what Eco Challenge is possible in their race production, their course design. It was something else to be a part of. The team that I was racing for, our navigator, he had done Eco Challenge Fiji, which was the last Eco of the time, 17 years prior. So to get to go back with him with its return, it was great. And we had an awesome time. You know, we just missed out on the top 10 in the end, which was a bit disappointing, but that's how racing goes, and some things didn't go our way out there. Of course, people can check it out. It is, I don't know if it's on Amazon Prime still, but Google it and people can find it if they're keen to see more about what that event was like. So that's near and dear to my heart for sure.
I have so many thoughts and questions about this one. I know it's not easy to get accepted to these things. So was there an application process similar to how there was the next year? And, you know, how did you apply? How did you get accepted? How did you come to find yourself at the start line of this race?
Yeah, there was an application process, which is not something we ever see in the sport. It's because they were filming this 10 series documentary on it, you know. That's what made it this one a little bit different. And initially, you know, it was very much all, they wanted to make sure they had the best teams in the world there, I think, along then with teams that were probably going to make for some really good TV drama. Like, they really went for a big scope because they needed to have a race actually happen with those, the front teams who were going to be pushing like would happen in any event. But right. Also important to show, you know, people who would just be making cutoffs, and then some of the team dynamics amongst, so, you know, getting lost and maybe not getting along with your teammates, that sort of thing. So I think they really wanted a big scope of teams to showcase. And so lots of teams, I think they had, I'm not even really sure, a few hundred teams apply. And I think in the end they took 60 something teams. But then I know when they were about to launch the next one, and they made, they put the call out for that and to submit videos and everything, I think there was a few thousand teams, because now word's gotten out. Yeah. It spoke to a lot of people. It caught their interest. So it would have been neat to see, you know, had another one been launched, what that would look like.
Okay. So do you mind me asking, because I haven't watched it myself, what was like your little drama? Like, you know, how you mentioned some people get lost, or some people, you know, they have their little fights or whatever. Like, what was the thing with your team? Can you put your finger on it?
No, I feel like, you know, we are just like, just sort of did our thing out there. Our team gets along great. I mean, these are all also incredible athletes with so much experience. We all know each other. We all mesh together. Like, we had just a great time. Sort of what happened with our team was there was some dark zones put on due to raising river levels. They were flooding, so the course became unsafe. It was the same thing with a whitewater rafting section. There was a dark zone. We couldn't paddle beyond 6 o'clock at night, and we just missed getting there. So then we spent the night camped on the side of the river for 10 hours. Just sometimes that happens in racing. Things change a little bit, and sometimes you get lucky and you get through fine, and other teams get upheld, and that's just how it goes. So I've been on both sides of the coin. We've won races because we've made it through before really bad weather came in, and, you know, I've seen it all, and it was just, it was unfortunate that that's how our Eco Challenge went. But nonetheless, you know, we pick up the pieces, we do what we can do, we race hard. You know, we had no major navigation errors, you know, little things go wrong here and there. But in general, like, you know, we had a good race and we had fun. So
you were fun to watch. I wish they, of course, would showcase more of Team Bones for Canada, but it was, Carolyn hasn't watched it, but I was one of those people that binge watched in like two nights. It was very, very exciting. Okay, so you mentioned Eco Challenge Fiji as one of your notable memorial experiences. What else comes to mind?
Well, and let's go back to almost the beginning. Marathon des Sables was the first ultra run that I took on. So I was still very young. I must have been around 20, 21. And I was doing my adventure racing thing. And I just had decided I wanted to see where I stood as a solo female athlete away from my teammates. You know, because it's great with adventure racing. You got the support of your team around. You lift each other up. You're doing all that. And I was like, but where do I stand? So when push comes to shove and it's only me out there, like, how is this going to go down? So I was Googling one night on internet and I just typed in like hard races or something like that. And hard running races, and up came the Marathon des Sables, which is of course a 7-day running race across the Sahara Desert in Morocco. And so that night I hit, you know, sign up, and I was like, I don't know how I'm even gonna get ready for this, like 7 days of running and self-supported, and anyway,
sand
in heat, like extreme heat, and what have I gotten myself into? And anyway, I found a way to prepare. I at that point hired a coach in Whistler, someone who could help guide me a little bit in the process. And so I think that was sort of my first introduction as well to this endurance realm of coaching, which would circle back later for me. Anyway, I went and had this, you know, incredible experience out there, and again, just fell in love with running for days on end and all the emotions that come with that and the abuse of the body and, you know, just how that would all play out. So it was fantastic. I mean, I was pretty beat up after it. I had infections and my backpack had rubbed and there was blood and all the things, but there was something about it that I loved. And I met some great people along the way. And actually, notably, another one of your guests, Ray Zahab, and I connected there, and we have been the best of friends ever since and gone on other global adventures and expeditions together. So you never know who you're going to meet, and you never know what these events bring, right?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, for example, in 2016, you were on Baffin Island and the Atacama Desert, which I know are two places very near and dear to Ray's heart. So, you know, as different guests come on our show, it's just interesting to see how the storylines intertwine and the common similarities between people. Like, how did you know and how did you come to be? And it's kind of fun.
Well, and we had a guest last year, Caroline Weeb, who did Marathon des Sables too. So we heard all about that, and it's a fascinating. I'd never even heard of it before, honestly. So yeah, it's a real marathon of whatever, like 7 days or 6 or 7 days of just being in that heat. Oh my goodness, and the sandstorms, and I remember everything she talked about, Kim.
Well, and the fact that it's entirely self-supported, right? Like other than water, you are carrying every single thing you need to survive, from food to clothing to everything on your back. Yeah. Other than maybe a tent, right? Which is just basically a roof over your head. There's no walls to the tents from what I hear. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, very iconic event, you know. And so it's neat now when I see athletes who want to take that on and prepare because it'll take you through all the emotions and just test yourself, you know, to the limits. But I think, it's a great one. So that one is near and dear to me because I was one of the first. So
excellent.
Now we might have been, sorry, Kim, if I'm skipping ahead in our questions here, but you are a coach, right? So do you find that people tend to almost self-select, like, oh, I want to do Marathon des Sables, and I know that Jen's done Marathon des Sables, so I'm going to hire her as my coach? Do you feel like people reach out to you because of some of the experiences that you've had?
Some people, for sure. Yeah, I think they like that confidence in knowing that I can relate to exactly how a certain race maybe goes, or, you know, you can just really share some personal experience on it. But, you know, on the same point, not always the case, right? I think sometimes it's just finding that coach that really meshes well with your goals, you know, someone that you're going to be able to relate to well, and then just that, you know, they know their stuff, and just how you really connect with it, because it really becomes such a personal relationship, as you know, with whomever you're working
with. Absolutely. It does. So, I mean, you're a busy person. You're a wife, a mom, you're still racing actively. Where does coaching fit into your repertoire of things? And, you know, what kind of coaching are you doing? How much time do you spend on it?
Yeah, coaching found me. That's not, it's not where, if you'd asked me about 18 years ago, I didn't think that's what I would be doing, but it kind of found me and pushed me into learning a new skill set to kind of back up and pair with the experiences that I was having. So, yeah, I've been coaching full time. It has been 18-ish years, I would say. Mixed into that has been some things I did in Squamish. I ran a high performance training gym that I opened just to work on the strength component with all the mountain athletes that were there. At the same time, I was working with athletes still all over the world, helping them pursue their endurance goals. And then eventually, just with life being so busy, becoming a mom, I just was realizing I wasn't being able to work one-to-one in person as much at the gym. And so I thought, okay, it's time to close this down and just, you know, focus in on one thing. And so that became the endurance coaching side of things. And so, yeah, so I've just pursued that. I work with, you know, an array of people from the beginner to elite runners and adventure racers, you know, anything in the endurance realm is really where I focus. I love it. I find it every day when I sit down at my computer and I'm doing emails and writing programs, you know, it's, I'm solving that individual puzzle for people. And that's what I love. Like, no two athletes are the same. I don't treat athletes the same. It's finding that real personal roadmap on how we're going to get them from A to Z and everything that comes up in between. They're working, their parents, they're, or maybe they're not, maybe they're young and they've just got so much energy and so much time. And so, you know, it's just, you see the whole scope and I love it. That's what challenges me to keep learning and improving and honing in on my skill set. And yeah, I, you know, the last few years, I've really taken an interest in, you know, some female specific protocols. The more research that's come out, the more I'm finding I'm adapting my programming to that, because we have, you know, more knowledge on how do we work with the different hormone cycles of a female in a specific period of their life. And so that's been great to keep me learning and trying to implement these protocols and try to pull out still the best in each female. So yeah, lots of learning there. And like I said, that's what I do full time. So when I go to work, I come into my office and I'm on the computer for a lot of it.
Well, I think it's great when an athlete has such a passion for their sport that you do and such experience to share that with others, right? Like, these are the types of coaches we need in any kind of athletic field. You mentioned working specifically with the specificities of coaching a female different from a male. We've actually talked a lot about that on this show. We just did a book review on Good for a Girl by Lauren Fleshman. Am I saying that right? Yeah.
Right.
And Roar, right? We've talked about that as well. There is a lot of stuff coming out and we can't ignore it anymore. We need to pay attention, right? I think, you know, we as women for so long fought to be treated equal. But the fact is we're not equal. We're very, very different in good ways, right? And now it's nice to see the pendulum swinging to celebrate some of our differences, not always trying to be the same as the guys, right?
Absolutely. People are just wondering, okay, like, there's so much information out there. Why I try this and it doesn't work and why not? And so finally, I feel like we have some answers to some things and so that we can support females better in their journey. And it's knowledge that we didn't have before because this research just wasn't being done. So definitely, you know, hats off to some of the science researchers in this area who are taking the time to collect the proper data and then put it into, you know, useful information that we can take and apply to people. Mm-hmm. So it's a big step forward, I think.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's about time, isn't it? Now, sure earlier, earlier you were mentioning, again, we talked about your own durability. It sounds like you're a very resilient athlete. You're not super injury prone. And then you just there touched on strength training. So I'm wondering kind of what you think maybe the link is there between strength training and being more durable as an athlete and not getting those repetitive strain injuries.
Huge fan of strength for women in all phases of their training lifestyle. And even if they're not, you know, athletes in training, I mean, strength is something I just don't feel that we can neglect. And when I'm looking at the performances of my athletes, those that strength train, I mean, they just seem to be able, they're just that much more resilient. We can keep injuries at bay so much easier. It's huge for that hormonal support. It's huge for as they age as well. So, you know, you don't have to be a gym rat. You don't have to think, okay, oh no, this means now I'm going to the gym 6 days a week and I'm going to be lifting. I mean, you can really get it down to short and sweet workouts just by doing the right type of strength. Yes. And at the right time. Yeah, I mean, I highly encourage it for my athletes, you know, and a lot of them, if I'm not programming their strength, it's great because maybe they are already at a gym in their hometown and they're seeing a trainer one-to-one or a part of a group class or something, they have access to something. And so I just encourage that if that's what they can do, but it gets them into the gym. And then, you know, maybe there's that part of the season as they come into in season and the volume is coming up more in the outside and that sport specific work. Okay, then maybe the strength can back down. But in those off seasons, in those winter months, like, you know, you want to hit the gym. And the payoffs are huge. You see it in the power, in the strength, in the speed, and in their resilience. Yeah.
Yes.
Big fan.
Preach it, preach it.
Yeah. Stuff, but it's great. It sounds like you guys are, you know, very much in support of strength yourselves, and
absolutely, yeah. We are. Yeah, thank you, Carolyn, for asking that very important question. The more people we can have recorded for the record stating that strength is important, the better. I want to loop back a little bit to, you know, the talk about women training maybe differently, not just from the men, but throughout our lives with regards to the stage of our lives that we're in. You also mentioned that you are a mother, and I believe it was about 10 years ago, you experienced pregnancy and childbirth. And as one looks, you guys are going to have to go and check out Jen's website. She's got this tiny little box, this unobtrusive box that you could click on that lists her achievements. And prior to 2013, you know, there was tens, if not dozens, of races each year listed. And then after 2013, when you had your, you know, pregnancy and then had your son, the list got shorter, and I would say a bit more curated. And I'm just wondering, you know, how your perspective changed. Was your approach to training and racing, did it change because you were now a mother, or were there other factors there that maybe changed the way you selected your races?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of a loaded answer that I can give you on this one, because there was a big learning curve that happened. So, you know, a lot in my 20s and into my 30s, I raced as much as I could. I didn't like to say no, and I loved it, and then I still do. But I also started to find myself getting into a little bit of a hormonal imbalance as well, which I didn't really realize the depth and the root of that at the time. I was just pushing my body and, racing and adventuring hard. And then, you know, you pair that then with becoming a mother and things change a lot, of course, for the better. But now you've added another piece of sort of stress into the puzzle. So you're trying, you know, I was trying to train full time. I'm working full time. I'm trying to, you know, I'm a mother first and foremost, you know, working on, you know, relationship that has now just shifted with my partner because we've got a son. There's so many things happening in there. And again, I start to sort of feel there's something not right with the hormones. I'm taxing my body too much. It's like I'm in this constant state of stress, trying to do it all. And, you know, and of course, for these sports that I do, it demands a fairly large and significant commitment to the training and what you do just in the weeks and the months leading up. And it was all just sort of coming to the forefront for me. And I was like, okay, this is not going to work. I'm in this, you know, constant state of imbalance. Something's got to give. And so in order to keep myself healthy and performing and feeling good and being available and in a good spot to be a mother, something's going to have to change here. And so what happened is, yes, you see a drop off of some races. One, I just started to get a lot more selective with what it was that I wanted to do and where I wanted to put my time. I didn't want to be gone all the time. I started to see, and you guys would know as well as parents, like the speed at which, you know, they grow up. It's like we're just on this like crazy time speed now. It's insane. And I was like, I don't want to be gone for weeks at a time and always just out the door and back. And I've got to really do some sort of picking and choosing here because I want to be home and I want to be a part of things at home. And I didn't want to be missing all this. So, mm-hmm. you know, I got very selective in what caught my attention, what was really motivating, what did I want to put the energy into train for? And of course, you know, to what worked for my partner, who also has to go away and, you know, he's doing his guiding and things like that. So yeah, life just took a turn, and for the better. It's, that's my decision to, yeah, be here more and just, really think before I go after another goal. And yet I still believe and I encourage it with my athletes, with myself and my partner supports me. Like we really believe in setting these goals and chasing down dreams and things at all stages of our life. We didn't want that to quit for anybody. I think there's a way to always make it work. It just looks a little bit different now. And you know, our son is almost 10 and, you know, we've had a few years now of adventure races together. I've got him here now doing the Mind Over Mountain Adventure 1 day races. So we're racing as a family. You know, we're out mountain biking, we're out paddle boarding, doing overnight trips. Adventuring can just look different, but it's incredible to be doing things as a family as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe that long-winded answer there to say, yes, things have shifted.
I love how you just wrap that up in a nice little bow. Start what maybe started out as a bit reactive with noticing your stress levels and your hormone shift turned to complete proactive approach. It was a choice you made to race differently for your sake and for your family's sake. And you're not apologizing for it. And I think that's awesome. I am curious, did you go through a period of, for lack of a better word, grief, sense of loss, difficulty letting go, or was it a fairly easy transition for you?
No, I would say there's definitely times, you know, where you look at races that are about to take place or that you just can't go to, doesn't work for the family, doesn't work for the calendar, that kind of thing. And you have that moment of, oh, I wish I was there or whatnot. But the reality is, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's 3 years down the road and maybe I do go and I can, you know, tackle right. that or whatnot. So,
well, let's be honest, you're still doing races. You haven't stopped, right? So maybe I phrased that wrong, right? It's not like you're grieving not racing anymore. Just a shift in mentality and approach for sure. And I know new moms go through that. I went through that. You know, I wasn't able to do the same volume or, you know, like you said, every weekend I wasn't able to be out there. I had to be a bit more selective and choose, especially like you said, these big ones that require massive time commitments for training, travel, expense. Right? It's like, okay, yeah. What am I going to invest in that is going to be well received by my family as well as all aspects of my life stay in balance, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, we talk so much about balance. Like we check in, what do you need? What do I need? What, like, how do we want this all to play out? And we hold so much more space now, you know, for each of us, but and for the family, because it's not long until, you know, our son's going to be growing up and things are going to shift again and look different. And all those events and all those other goals that I've got and mountains I want to climb, whatever it is, they'll be there. Right. So mm-hmm. why not just try to yeah. really stay in the present and do what works at this point in time for us.
Absolutely. So part of the race experiences that you have had have been by nature multi-day and they've taken you to lots of different amazing places. For a lot of us, I would look at that almost like if it wasn't a race, more project style experience. I know you've done lots of fastest snow and time attempts on different trails as well, which is, you know, you're just racing against the clock and other humans out there that have potentially done this route. So in addition to the FKTs, you also started and founded Run BC, which, you know, is a guiding, is that, would that be a good way to say it? A guiding / coaching company that enables people to do multi-day treks / runs through remote locations all over the world and experience these places as well. So talk to us a little bit about maybe the FKT thing and what appeals to you about that. Mm-hmm. And then also a little bit about Run BC.
Yeah, the the FKT, sort of chasing some of these trail times, it's kind of a really fun world just to play in. I mean, it's very much on your honor system. It is, like you said, it's chasing down a fast time free of any formal competition. So you do things, you do it when you want to do it, and you submit a time in, right? And so it's a very interesting way of sort of competing and pushing yourself without anybody else there to, you know, around you. So sometimes, you know, we do these endeavors solo or in twos or what have you. But they really just appeal to me because at the end of the day, I just want to be out on the trails. I just want to be out in nature, really just in my happy place where I have the most fun and I feel so comfortable at. So they've sort of grown in popularity. I mean, now they're, look up any trail probably, and there's some form of FKT to chase down. And it's just a great way to combine wanting to compete and try to see what, you know, I'm capable of on that given day with my love for being outside. And so, you know, I've tried to choose some various trails and routes that speak to me or that fit into the schedule, you know, just for that good, hard, strong effort. So, you know, that probably even directly ties a little bit into Run BC in that through that, what I'm doing is providing these experiences, you know, out into some amazing mountains and coastal routes here, BC and the Rockies, I mean, international. And they're guided running trips. So they are not competitive in any way, but they are providing an opportunity for people who love being on the trail to have another avenue in which to adventure that is free from a race course or standing on a start line or having that pressure that goes along with, you know, the gun going off and you got to go execute your race day plan. So yeah, so Run BC was, it was a passion project of mine. I've got a background in guiding, something I've done, since I graduated. And, I just saw this need. I saw so many friends and athletes and people who were like, oh, that just looks amazing. Like, how'd you get into that mountain range? How do you do that? And people were just searching for something where they could feel safe, but still have an adventurous experience. So as a guide, I'm an ACMG guide, and I can take people into these really cool places, and just people can leave the logistics to me, right? So, you know, they have a general sense of here's what's going on, but I can do the navigating and all the other sort of footwork and the background work that's going into things, and people can show up and just enjoy their time in nature and still have a challenge, right? We do sometimes they're big distances, there is challenging terrain, and you still come out with that sense of accomplishment, but you didn't have to stand on a race course to do it.
Right. Well, how many times have I heard, and I said myself, that I've signed up for a 100-mile race, you know, it's great because there's 8 stations, I have to worry about safety and the course is marked. But the negative of it is you are moving relatively, and I've used the word relatively fast through that course, right? And half of it's at night. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could see that section during the day. So if you take, you know, a distance, I think of UTMB, for example, you know, you could do UTMB over the course of 4 or 5 days and actually see the entire course during the day and take your time to take a few pictures and experience it with your friends in a totally different, I don't know, format and mood and mindset. So I can see like this type of multi-day expedition guiding sounds very intriguing. Carolyn, this is going to be the way I get you into ultra running. We're going to do the distance but in a camp for the big girls on some kind of trip like this.
this sounds right.
Summer camp. My alley.
Yes. But even like, you know, when you're thinking about like, my husband and I will often have these conversations, like we want to go on a holiday, but we don't want to just like sit on the beach. Like we want to do something active and see things, right? So it's kind of speaking to that sort of adventurous person who wants to go in and have an experience on their vacation as well, I would think. Do you find that those are the kind of people that are drawn to it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, like I said, we get the ultra runner who's just looking for another, like maybe a long trail that they want to take on. To, yes, we get people, it's just like, oh, I don't want any kind of pressure. I want to go run hut to hut to hut, or, you know, I want to see a trail, but in a shorter amount of time that it would take me to hike. So maybe the fast packing option is a great way. And we, you know, we can pare that right down. Or maybe it's that, yeah, we return to a great, comfortable mountain lodge every night, but we go out and every day we're summiting a different peak or a different pass, or, you know, you're in these incredible environments. I mean, you want to be active, but maybe some of the trips that I offer still have that, maybe it's that glass of wine or a beer at the end of the day and a really good food. Maybe we have a chef in the backcountry lodge that we're based out of. And so no one has to cook, right? You're still enjoying great food. Yeah. But you're also out on the trails all day. Or you get, to the range of something, say like a West Coast trail trip where we do the trail in 3 days, 2 nights instead of the standard 7 days. But you're self-supported. So everything's on your back. And, you know, we're run hiking during the day and then we're sleeping next to the ocean in a beautiful campsite, you know, with a little fire going, cooking over the stove, you know, getting up in the morning and having that nice hot coffee and the waves are crashing. And then boom, we're back on the trail for another 7-8 hours. I mean, it's for some of us, that's an idea of a perfect vacation.
So would you like my credit card right now, or where do I send it?
You know, I talked about this, a scope of trips to appeal to different levels, you know, and a wide array of like durations or how much time on trail per day. And I really, I have so many ideas and I'm always collecting route ideas or trails that, you know, speak to people or, you know, I take it all in and then I sort of see, okay, where can I get permits and how do we tie this in? I try to introduce one or two new trips each year, maybe let one or two trips go for a while, then I'll bring it back again. And I mean, many people who have come with me year after year, they're just like, where are we going next year? You know, and, you know, it's definitely a community. I've been guiding the Run BC trips, I think for eight years now, maybe. And a lot of times you get a few of the same people on each of the trips. And so it really has created this like community of runners, but just in a different way from what you see at a race.
Yeah. Now I very much am intrigued by this. And I have a question for you just on the personal side, like how you make this all work. Like you mentioned, you've got a family and you have your own training and you have your own coaching and then you're doing this as well. So like, do you have to sort of time this to work and fit in with your own training? If you're training for something big, like you have to kind of offset when you'll go on the Run BC trips with people.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much solving the my own personal puzzle. So, you know, like I said, I can't do everything anymore. So I will be selective on those races and then I'll decide, okay, well, how many trips am I going to do this year? Because that is time away. So it's just a couple trips a year. And I really do this it's a passion project for me. I just love it. I love taking people into these environments and I see the growth that happens. I see how they feel at the end. It's super rewarding for me. It's definitely just something extra I do because I love it. It is not my main focus, but there just seems to be a demand and I come back feeling so fulfilled from it, even though guiding is tiring and you're on for days at a time. A few trips a year, it's pretty special. And the people I meet and how you connect with people, I think out there and in nature. And that was the one thing, you know, after I closed down my gym and I didn't have that personal contact with people day to day. Now I am, you know, behind the computer screen doing so much and I'm not having that same interaction with people in the physical sense so much. So I enjoy these trips as much as the clients who come with me.
Sure.
Oh, I'm so intrigued. We're going to talk a little bit more offline, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay.
We can do that.
So we are definitely getting on in time, but I don't want to let you go without talking a little bit about what you've got planned for 2023. So I know you have two big events on your calendar. Tell us about Expedition Canada, which is coming up in a couple weeks, and the Divide 200 that's coming up in September. Why did you choose these events and what are you doing to prepare?
Yeah, the first one up is, end of May. So we are getting close. Expedition Canada, so that's a 600-kilometer adventure race happening in the Kelowna, Penticton area of BC. The race, I went to it last year. It was a great experience at that one. And so, and actually funny enough on that too, I was racing with one of the race directors from Eco Challenge. So, who's a good friend of mine. So yeah, we put this team together and we went out and just had a blast. I love to support adventure racing here in Canada. Really important to me that, we do our best to try to help these race directors, and their races survive, because it's just not the same degree of people, like numbers of volumes of people in Canada, right? So it's a little different from in the States, where there is a tons of racing happening. My athletes are racing like almost every weekend if they wanted to. There's just so many more events, and we don't have a whole lot here in Canada. So yeah, so this is sort of our big expedition race. And it's a great event. So I'll hit that one up soon. I'm racing with a different team. I'm racing for Bones Canada coming up. Yeah, we're hoping for, it's a good team, very experienced team. So we should be able to push it hard. There'll be live tracking for people who do want to check in. I'll post that all on my social media, handles and stuff. So people who do want to dot watch and watch the race unfold in live time can. And then, into the summer, I've just got a whole bunch of bucket list runs and new mountains and things that I'm going to personally tackle where time allows. And then in September, I will find myself at the new, the 200 miler being put on by Sinister 7 events. So the same folks who've been putting on, some of the great ultra running races that we have here in Canada, they have launched the Divide 200. This is the first year on this new 200 miler course, and that's based out of sort of this right in the corner there of the BC Alberta border near Castle Mountain. So
yeah,
really looking forward to that one. I love being a part of the new event. I know they put on excellent, well executed events, so I have no doubts about that. Sin 7 is very close to my heart as an ultra from back in the day, and so yeah, looking forward to it. I've got a great crew, mix of people coming to help, and longer the better for me. I treat it very much like an adventure race in my mentality and how I will put a sleep strategy into place, and really looking forward to that one.
Well, this is really, it's going to be exciting for me to see how this one happens, not only because it's in my backyard, but it's the first mountain 200 in Canada. And now I know you've covered that distance before, obviously, in your adventure sports, but have you ever covered that distance on foot in one continuous push before, or would this be a new, slightly new thing for you?
No, I have done the Tour de Géants in Italy. So that's another big 350K one. Badwater wasn't quite that long. I'd have to look back. But yeah, it's a beast for sure. it's a big undertaking. So it's just going to be about having a good strategy in place, wanting to be out there, keeping your head in the game. And I'm most excited actually for the night sections. I love racing through the night. I love having the headlamp on, and when that sun goes down, I love it. I love through the night. You bang off some kilometers and see where you end up when the sun comes back up the next day. So
you really are made for these sports, let me tell you. I'll be very interested to see your sleep strategy, because that's the hot topic in the ultra running community, right? Is as these races move into the 200 mile distance, what's the sleep strategy? And that's kind of old hat for adventure racers, right? So it'll be interesting. Yeah. To see how it goes for
maybe,
you.
Maybe an episode on sleep deprivation and sleep strategy down the road.
I'm going to be out there crewing myself for my dear friend Heidi Schmaltz. So who knows where you guys will be in relation to each other, but it'll be fun to see how that whole event happens.
I look forward to seeing you out there. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Always have a little Inspired Souls reunion, isn't it, Kim? I'm going to have to travel out there just to hang out with all of you guys. Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, but Jen, we are the Inspired Souls podcast, so we always like to ask our guests where they find inspiration in their, you know, everyday life and in their, you know, in your case, your adventure racing life. But because you've been at it for such a long time, we're wondering whether where you find inspiration today is maybe different from where you found it 10 plus years ago.
I think at the heart of things, I mean, the environments, the mountains I'm on, the trails, I come back feeling inspired, right? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. However, I would say today and where I'm at in my life, it's the people that I meet along the way, the people I talk to, the people I coach, the people in our running community. You know, everybody's got a story. Everybody's working through their own challenges, their own journey to, you know, to get to where they're going. And I mean, I think if we just stop and listen to people, sometimes we can find so much inspiration, how they're moving through, how they're problem solving, all that. So I get so much of it. That's why I love what I do. And I love this community. It's what I think just keeps us coming back for more and always wanting to see more of what we're made of personally. So that's where the inspiration personally comes from.
Absolutely. Well, this has been, as I knew it would be, a really amazing conversation. Your passion, your enthusiasm, your energy just jumps through the microphone when you speak. So thank you for sharing with our running community a little bit about what adventure racing is and why it means so much to you, as well as the, you know, stories of your running time on the trails. You've dropped a lot of teasers as to some awesome opportunities for runners to get involved with your Run BC company, as well as follow along with some of your adventures. Where can people find you?
Yeah, my website's probably a good spot. It's just jensegger.com. From there, you can link over to Run BC. I am on Facebook and Instagram as well. So yeah, fire me a message. Love to connect with people. However I can support people's journeys or just meet new friends, that'd be great.
Excellent. Well, thanks
for having me.
Good luck with the rest of your season. Yeah.
Thank you. All the best to you guys as well. I look forward to seeing you in September at the 200.